Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally, and welcome to Musicals with Cheese, and today it's an extra special episode during Andrew's hiatus away. I am joined by my two co-hosts of the Dear Friends podcast, and people you guys just know. Of course you know it. Of course, it is Christy Esterly of Musical Hell and Emily Clark of Stealing
hello,
Focus.
Hello.
Yeah!
Here we are, baby.
I'm so happy you guys are here today, and when we're recording this, it is literally like 2 days after the big announcement, the announcement to end all announcements in musical theater.
I was in choir rehearsal, and then all of a sudden it's like, holy shit, my Twitter's blowing up.
Yeah, it was a thing where I think I was at work and or grad school or something, and I come back to my phone and I was like, well, I've missed some stuff.
I remember it happening, and my phone was like, yo, it's time.
Actually, my friend Ryan Scott Oliver, I think, was the one. I saw it on Twitter, and then Ryan texted me literally like 30 seconds later, and he's like, did you see this is happening? I was like, I know, like literally since we saw this musical in San Francisco before Broadway since 2003, in 2003, we've been speculating.
And honestly, it's been in development almost that long.
That whole freaking time. I will never forget going on the Universal backlot tour a good decade, 15 years ago, and seeing that Wicked poster there, like them going, we have this, we own this, we're never letting it go. And if it takes us 30, 40 years, we're going to be the ones to do this shit.
Yep.
The Wicked movie has been, like, has there been another movie, like, except Phantom, maybe, that has been this hyped?
I mean, you know, Wicked is such a tentpole in a lot of ways. I think it's going to go down in history as this important marker between the Broadway before and the Broadway after. Because
that makes sense.
It's like taking what we did with the 80s mega musicals in terms of merch and commodity and kicking that up a notch, you know, in a post-Disney world or a post-Disney on Broadway world.
And, yeah, honestly, it's going to be a cultural touchstone, too. I mean, we're already I guess it's 18 years old. So, you know, we're seeing that new generation who, you know, grew up with this was their, you know, first musical, the way, you know, Rent and, you know, the Lloyd Webber shows were for generations past.
Yeah, and it set this new standard for how women on Broadway are supposed to sing. For better or worse, you've got to scrout that F in the mask.
Yeah.
And be damned if you mix it or go into your soprano, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I do want to pause here. We are talking about the Wicked film. I have never had a full conversation with you guys about what we think of the Wicked musical. It once again, different generations. It's hit differently for different age groups. So I'm very curious. Like, I've basically never been in the theater community where Wicked hadn't existed.
Oh yeah.
So.
I mean, when it came out, I very much tie Wicked and a lot of other musicals from that time to my college years. I remember like driving around, going to San Francisco in the middle of the night to go to a gay club, and my best friend sitting next to me and going, let's listen to Defying Gravity again. Let's do it, because we were so obsessed. I'm glad I wasn't a little kid though. Because not glad is the right word. If I was a little kid, I probably would have been insanely, insanely obsessed. I just loved it. And, you know, I saw it, but I've only seen it on stage once. Like we did a reading of it in Play Club once, which was fun. But I like Wicked a lot. I'm not obsessed with it, but like,
it's
I like
same.
It a lot.
It's the same. You know, I'm older than everybody else here. So I was very much the 80s mega musical generation, you know, Les Mis and Phantom and, you know, even Cats. Where, you know, that was, you know, my thing growing up. And I see, you know, the younger, you know, girls who were, you know, like 14, 15 at the time, you know, Wicked was their thing. And it's like, you know, it's it, you know, I wasn't of that generation and didn't have it, but I definitely get it because that's what I went through with different shows. And, you know, it's a fun score. I mean, it's not Sondheim, but it's neat and it's catchy. And you've got some great female solos and duets in there. So, yeah.
Stephen Schwartz.
It's a fun show.
It's a good Stephen Schwartz show. I'm a fan of Schwartz. I like that he... To me, he's like this perfect medium between Sondheim and like Lloyd Webber, where it's like Sondheim is all intellect and all difficult stuff and difficult harmony, and whereas Andrew Lloyd Webber is all just verse chorus, verse chorus, verse chorus, verse chorus, modulate verse chorus. And I think Stephen Schwartz is a good middle ground because he does write, he can write intricate and deep things, but he also knows how to write a good banger, you know?
Like, yeah.
And he always has since the 70s. You know, Pippin is full of bangers, so.
Yeah. And Defying Gravity, I swear to God, I have been on long car trips, and that comes up, and it is like a shot in the arm. That's like the my 5-hour caffeine right there. It's like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there isn't the backlash that you get with a lot of popular musicals 20
there
years down
some,
the road.
There is some, I think, Wicked, but... And...
There's backlash for everything nowadays. Oh, yeah. It drives me crazy.
I mean, yes, but there isn't like the let's relook at Wicked the way there is a let's reevaluate Rent.
Yeah, and or you know, part Book of that Mormon, is even. You know, it's part of that is you know being associated with that younger female fan base, and there's always going to be people who look down on it because of that. So,
I also remember, you know, it's based off of the book by Gregory Maguire, and his books, I read Wicked, I read The Confessions of the Stepsister one, you know, that was kind of his oeuvre, was like, before Disney was doing it, was let me give you the villain origin story and how they were misunderstood.
Yeah, it's really dark and complicated.
It's dark.
And political. And
there's like animal orgies in it, like,
yes,
I mean, it's a thing.
There is like this, you know, all this philosophical stuff, and nihilism and existentialism, and yes, there's that weird scene in the philosophy club. I did an at the source about this, and I'm like, this is very different from the musical. So
I remember reading that so I read the book like right before I saw the musical in like 02 or 03, and I remember reading that going, I don't think they're going to put this on stage. but I do remember when I saw the show. So in the book, if you folks haven't read the book, Elphaba cannot touch water. Water actually does affect her. So she like cleans herself with oils and she has different, you know, it's Oz, it's magic world. And in the stage show, obviously it's like, oh, it's just a rumor. And then she fakes it so she can run away with Fiero in the end.
Right.
And in the book, spoiler alert, now she just dies just like how she does.
Accidentally. Yeah, it might not possibly be dead in the future versions. I don't know. I've only read up to Son of a Witch, so I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I read Son of a Witch, too, and I didn't love it.
Son of the Witch made me realize maybe I don't want
to. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, same here. Yeah. I was like, you know what? Wicked is good. That's good for me. I'm good with this.
Yeah, and I don't need to see this whole, you know, deconstruction of Oz done several times over.
And I think the book is clearly taking its inspiration from the books of The Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
Whereas Wicked, I think for obvious reasons, is pulling more, obviously using the structure from the book, but pulling more from the pop culture we know from the film, from the MGM film. Yeah.
But brilliantly so. I will say that is one of the most brilliant pieces where they just legally, like, alley-oop their way away from lawsuits.
Yeah, they use just enough of Somewhere Over the Rainbow and adjust it just enough so that, you know, you can't sue them. But when you know it's there, it's like,
you get
it.
Yeah. It's not like bad Cinderella level, but it's there.
I'm a bad
and also
Cinderella.
The ruby slippers.
I'm it's in like... my little chair, gonna throw it across the room because I'm a feminist. I'm a boss babe.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not like other girls. I wear plaid.
Right. Yeah.
I'm a different Cinderella. I make dresses. I'm just conflating them all. Just conflating all.
Yeah,
the
it's
same.
Like
they're all the
I'm
same
like,
show.
I'm sorry. I watched Ever After in the theaters. You are not doing anything original here.
I'm sorry. I saw Brandy Cinderella. That was good.
Yeah,
enough.
That's some good stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
But also, like, with the ruby slippers, where they
shine the light.
Make them slip. Yeah, but the light was such a brilliant way where they're like, fuck you. It's not technically ruby slippers.
Yeah.
We cheated. There's so many brilliant things done there. And I also have gone on record many times of saying Wicked is like the perfect musical adaptation because it's just enough of something everyone is familiar with where anyone can walk in, but you're not going to know every word, every line of the plot. Yeah. It's not like Frozen the musical. It is of a property, but
I mean, it's that same high that Disney's been chasing since they've never been able to get the rights to Wicked. So they just keep remaking that story with different villains of theirs, you know.
And then don't forget the first one, Oz the Great and Powerful, which was
awful.
Yes.
Sam Raimi directed that. My boy, look what you've done.
Oh, the witch was just a jealous ex-girlfriend. What the hell?
That's how we go crazy.
Apparently it is.
We all just want James Franco wizard, apparently.
Apparently. We all want this average-looking pothead.
No. I want Joel Grey wizard.
Do you know who was originally cast as the wizard, though, before James Franco?
No.
It was Robert Downey Jr. Like, they had actually started shooting with him, and then Robert Downey Jr.
I would have signed up for that. I mean, come on.
I would have, too. That movie would have actually worked okay with him, because he would have improvised his way through it, and his
he's really good his charm and all at doing, that. You know, that guy who's kind of jerky, but, you know, there's something a little deeper underneath
it. You still
kind
of want him? Yeah.
And the role was conceived for him. He was like one of the original producers and all that. Like, he was on there before the director was on there, and then shooting kind of fell apart, and he left. And then, you know, James Franco stepped in, and he's what he is. back to Wicked. So the movie has been announced. Yeah. John M. Chu. This has been in development since the day it came out. What were some other big rumors of Elphaba and Glinda over the years?
I feel like every single time in the past, like, let's say 5 years, when they had so many flippin' retrospective birthday concerts for Wicked in the past few years. Like, what is that, first of all? And I feel like every single one of them was an audition.
Right.
I feel like every single one was, like, them trying to figure out how to do this, how to make this
and
work.
And it basically cycles through, you know, whoever's popular at the time, whoever's, you know, most easily associated with it. I mean, you know, obviously at the beginning they were talking Adina and Kristen for the leads, and then they
kind of back in
out,
the day.
And then Glee came around and everyone was saying Lea Michele should do it. And then, you know, the Descendants came around and everyone said Duff Cameron should do it. So
was there ever a Vanessa Hudgens rumor?
I feel like there should have been. I was actually kind of pulling for her after Rent because I was like, she could do it.
I love Vanessa Hudgens. I love the turn she's made in these past decade. I mean, she's, you know, she has her issues. But...
Yes.
Yeah, she's really grown into her abilities, and good for her.
With this perfect finale, the cheers and the valley, who wouldn't be happier? So I couldn't be happier. Because happy is what happens when all your dreams come true. Well, isn't it? Happy is what happens when your dreams come true.
So Vanessa Hudgens is great, and I think would have been good in a Wicked movie.
Mm-hmm.
What was some of the weirder ones thrown out there? Like, Amanda Seyfried apparently really, really wanted Glinda. Like, she's like, I was a maid for this role, and if I don't get it, I don't know what I'll do. I remember that quote.
I mean,
like, within
the
last 2 years, she said that.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a wonderful actor, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind she could have acted it well, and she's... She's not a bad singer, obviously, but I don't think she has the power
right. yeah.
necessary for the
I
role.
Think, you know, I think no matter what, you know, unless, you know, you actually de-aged Kristen Chenoweth and or got a Broadway actress, which, spoiler alert, this is Hollywood, they weren't going to get a Broadway actress. I think,
in the traditional
I think,
sense.
I think no matter who they picked, they were somebody was going to be disappointed about who they picked as Glinda, because it is a deceptively difficult role.
Yes.
You have to do a good legit, you have to do a good belt, she has a hell of a character arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, it's so funny how people are so shocked. I think this is something, though, I was kind of like when I was like a 17-year-old theater kid, which I think are the ones who are like so shocked about the casting. Mm-hmm. To me, I'm like, this is win-win casting
yes.
for Broadway and Hollywood. Mm-hmm. This to me, it's like they were always going to get a Broadway name. Who was big,
right?
And they were going to get
somebody
a
who had you know, who'd done it some Broadway, you know, so they could say that.
But knows how
it,
to act
was,
for film,
yeah.
That knows how, and we're really lucky because Cynthia Erivo in the past few years has been she's been nominated for an Oscar,
right.
Like she's a prestige actor mm-hmm. and a Tony Award winning musical theater performer. So again, win win,
right?
You got that, and. What, the first black Elphaba?
Apparently.
Is this
yeah,
right?
They never actually had a, you know, principal Elphaba, a black principal Elphaba on Broadway.
Right,
so.
Not, yeah. Yeah, maybe an understudy.
Yeah.
But, wow. I mean, so to me, I'm like, and the thing is, no one's stressing about that. Everyone's
yeah.
like,
yeah, nobody
gonna be great,
cares. Everybody, Ariana Grande is the one everybody's worried about, and I'm just kind of like, you know,
I'm concerned.
Yes,
you know, no one's more concerned than Taylor Lautner. Let's just say that. Oh, the Caucasity.
Oh
was
my God,
dying.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that was some schadenfreude yeah. on yeah. my part, but
here's the thing. I think John M. Chu earned a lot of goodwill with In the Heights because there were casting issues there, but the casting issue was, you know, Washington Heights should really have more black people in it. It wasn't, can these actors actually sing and act the roles? Because if you
yes.
look on a performance level, it is the best cast musical in years. So I'm like, you know, if
so
he
good.
Thinks she can do it, you know, I'm going to, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt for the time being.
And that's the thing. Like, this is the other thing. Is I'm like, you guys know she probably had to do multiple auditions, mm-hmm. multiple reads, chemistry reads. There's no way they were just going to give away this major role, even to Ariana Grande. They weren't just going to give it away without making absolutely sure that she could do it. And what's so funny is everyone's been like, she only sings pop. And I'm like,
no, she doesn't.
No,
she's
she doesn't.
Known for singing pop.
She, her, that's what she's like. That's mm-hmm. her. That's how she makes her money.
Yeah.
Like she because she can do mm-hmm. it. But like
yeah.
her party trick is imitating other vocal styles perfectly. She's trained.
Yeah.
She can do it. I remember people saying this shit when Brandy was cast as Cinderella. And I remember reading interviews at the time. And she was like, I had to learn how to sing the proper way.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a good vocalist,
yeah.
you can get the vocal training
mm-hmm.
to do it.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, I don't get it. I think it's
yeah.
just people just
and
hating
speaking
on
of party
it,
tricks,
like,
you know, I love Cheno. You know, she's fantastic. She's funny. She's, you know, an amazing soprano. But, you know, her party trick is the high notes. Any role that she does, you know, no matter what, it's like, here's my high note. And it's like, okay. So, you know, it's like,
yep.
Yeah.
Even if she's cleaning her house.
Yeah. Yes.
Literally.
You know.
Literally.
So
that's what
yeah,
her thing is.
Yeah, I think,
is.
You know, I think it's great. And I think, you know, I kind of think we kind of expect that from Glinda to have that higher register. But maybe it's not entirely necessary.
I agree.
I've been thinking about that, too, because, again, I haven't seen all the Glindas. So maybe some of the listeners can vary, you know. But my summer program, like over a decade ago, we had Megan Hilty come and she was talking about when she did Glinda.
Uh-huh.
And I know Megan Hilty. I know she can sing high,
mm-hmm.
but like she's not like a Chenoweth,
right?
Right? Like she's not like I'm just gonna bust a high C
just because I can.
She's got like this belt, which is a lot more. It's a lot more in her chest,
mm-hmm.
and it's a lot more. It sounds raw, but it's not raw.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's got that edge to it,
mm-hmm.
and to me, that's a very different Glinda sound. And you know, the Chenoweth. When you listen to the original cast recording of Wicked, those high notes. Like, none of them have to
no.
be.
No, like, the end of Thank Goodness.
They're all just.
Like, the end of Thank Goodness, that's a very obvious opt-up because she can.
It's an opt-up. And and popular isn't even a challenging
popular,
song to sing.
What is this?
It's
feeling?
A character.
A lot
song.
Of Glinda's shit is, you know, pop to belt stuff. So yeah.
Sometimes when they're blending in, like For Good, she's on the lower harmony.
Right.
So it's like it's just that Chenoweth originated it, and that's what she can do.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it.
Yeah.
And we've heard it. So why do we need to have that exact same thing again on screen?
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my thought. It's just another interpretation. And maybe she will.
Because Ariana Grande because can maybe she can. So yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And you know what? If she's riffing and poppy, so what? It'll be a different.
But let's not forget that she did a cover of Popular a few years ago that was like on the stations every other day. And I'm like, you know what? This is fine. She's
yeah.
doing fine. But a thing that people don't bring up as much, which was my concern, and then I used my brain for 5 seconds, was that Glinda is a very funny role. She is probably, although a lot of the weight of the comedic side of this story
yes.
is on that character's shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of need this broad, fearless comedy drive that Kristen Chenoweth and a lot of other
right.
Glindas have had. And then I thought, oh, wait, where the fuck did Ariana Grande get her start? In fucking Nicktoon sitcoms. Nickelodeon sitcoms.
Yeah.
And she was
yeah.
great. She knows what she's doing there.
I think she's very funny. I love her weird. I don't know. She'll be weird. Like, I like it. She'll be like, huh, blah, 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 blah. She might be a little, like, more wide-eyed
yeah.
and ditzy.
She'll be a little Paris Hilton more than.
And
yeah.
she's good at the deadpan, though. That's the thing.
Yeah,
like,
that's
I actually.
The thing is that Glinda does not know she is funny. She is not trying to be funny. That's just what's going on in her head.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and again, like, actors. Actors can be directed. I this is what's driving me crazy with people online. They're like, she can't do it. It's like, well, she's going to have a director mm-hmm. who's going to tell her what to do and vocal coaches. And like, she's proven she could do it. So like,
yeah,
this isn't
and,
like,
you know,
this
maybe
isn't like Mark Platt giving Ben, Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah.
Oh, that's things. Another speculation though, isn't it?
Yeah. We'll come to that. We'll come
yeah,
to that.
But
all right,
okay.
We're going to hold
yeah,
those for
not
a second.
Like, you know, and it might not work, but, you know, I think, you know, she's shown enough talent. I think Chu has shown enough good instincts as a director that,
yeah.
you know, I'm like, okay, I'll you know, I'll watch and see what you can do with this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if she sucks, I'll eat crow. But
yeah.
to me, the argument right now is like, how could she be cast? And I'm like, this seems like a no-brainer casting decision.
Now, what people are bringing up a lot, which I think is another unfair thing to bring up, is Hairspray Live, where she was not at her best performance.
Nobody
in there.
Was. Martin Short was flubbing his lines for crying
yeah.
out loud.
I feel like I'm the only one who actually kind of liked her Penny Pingleton.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I wasn't. I mean, everyone was flubbing. Everyone
that was
yeah,
a rough
was,
live production
yeah.
in general.
That was a messed up production.
But I don't know. I kind of liked it again just because it was kind of different. I just
mm-hmm.
kind of. You know, I guess, like, it didn't make, like, the hugest impact on me, but I didn't walk away going, trash, you're trash,
yeah, me neither.
You're garbage. I was just like, oh, it was kind
yeah.
of like a kind
and
of, like,
you know,
her
for
version
all
of
the,
Penny.
For all the flubs and stuff, it was, like, it was a decent, you know, couple hours. I don't regret every moment that I spent watching it. There was some good stuff going on there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember having a great time.
Yeah.
I
mean,
know.
You know, you had Jennifer Hudson, you know, rocking the shit out of I Know Where I've Been. That was incredible,
mm-hmm.
so.
I think
yeah.
that was a rough production in a couple ways. Where
yeah.
they were trying to one-up the Grease live done by Fox, and
they
yeah,
sure
and
it didn't
work. They sure were. Did not.
Because it's just a
nope.
different kind of show.
Right.
So I feel like they kind of just messed up the whole style choice, which made the actors feel a little lost.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that's no way to judge even your best performers, because live shows like that, it's hard to really
it
perform
all, yeah.
in the same way.
I mean, you know, how many great actors have, you know, horror stories? There's apparently a Judy Garland recording somewhere where she goes up on her lyrics and just goes la 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 for like a stanza.
Mm-hmm. So, and if you've got multiple takes and a warm set, time to like actually prepare and stuff, she's going to give a knockout performance.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest concern when I heard her name thrown around, I don't think she'd be a good Elphaba. And I still stand by that. I don't think she would have been as good an Elphaba. She is a perfect Glinda though.
Well, and see, that's the thing, is I always thought she was going to be Elphaba purely just because of the belty
yeah.
stuff. But now that I see this casting, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And Chenno, she and Chenno for like the past month have been just like spewing love at each other on like social media.
Well, didn't they just do The Voice together?
Like, Chenno guested on The Voice, mm-hmm. and then they've just been very, I felt like this was coming.
Yeah.
I was like,
Yeah, in retrospect, yeah.
But the Cynthia Erivo one, I remember feeling like it came out of nowhere, because even on that that concert that they did most recently, you know, everyone was like, oh, it's going to be Ariana DeBose or it's going to be Amber mm-hmm. Riley. And I remember Cynthia Erivo was in it.
She sang.
But she sang a weird snippet. She sang something. And it was beautiful. She sang, I remember being like, oh, what was
thank
it?
Goodness. Like, she's like, I couldn't be happier. I couldn't be happier.
Oh,
and I'm like,
yes, that's right.
I'm like, that's a weird one for her.
Yeah.
And it was a weird cut. Yeah. So, and I remember thinking that's beautiful, but then I didn't think one thing of it because, again, Cynthia Erivo to me is like, ever since she got like her Oscar nom, to me, it's like, well, she's kind of, I felt like she was on a different plane at this point. But now it's like, as soon as she got cast, everyone was like, oh,
yeah,
we don't have to worry.
Although
there is this weird argument where people are like, she's 34 and, you know, Arya's 28 and they're too old. They're getting into the Evan Hansen of it all. And I'm like, it's a magical made-up
I mean, do we want to talk about how old Judy Garland was in 1939? I mean.
Yeah. Also, I don't know the logistics of Ozzian collegiate age limits.
And also, they have to age throughout the story, which is the difference between Dear Evan Hansen.
They sure do.
Yeah, they do.
They have
to
be able to play the younger side and the older side, which is why the ages they're at are perfect for this role.
It's a little more fantastic and a little more broader than Dear Evan Hansen, which is supposed to be like this naturalistic high school story.
Exactly. Like Green Girl and like talking animals. Like,
yeah,
we can maybe suspend our disbelief a little
and
bit.
And honestly, that green makeup, I mean, that does kind of give Elphaba almost this ageless quality because, you know, how do you even judge, you know, somebody who, you know, doesn't look like a normal human? How do you even judge their age? So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we bring up concerns that we have, not even about the casting, but about the film in general? Because I'm sure we are going to have some. John M. Chu, fantastic director. The director of photography from this is the same one from In the Heights and also the upcoming Tick, Tick, Boom movie. Both of them look like visual treats to the eyes.
Yeah, so I think as far as staging the songs go, it's going to be fantastic. And that's going to be important because there is a lot of... there's a lot of park and bark here. I mean, you've got Defying Gravity, where it's just, you know, standing there and showing off, I'm not that girl, things like that. I think they can find ways to make that interesting and not like, oh, hey, here's an actor singing for 5 minutes. We're just going to do like some weird music video shit around it.
Yeah, and John Chu has proven, especially with In the Heights, that it's okay to revel in the fact that you're making
it is
a
musical,
freaking musical.
And it is okay.
And this is a musical about Oz and witches and magic things and super heightened. So he needs to go all out with this. I want bright colors. I want music everywhere. I want choreography everywhere. I want those interesting visual shots that, like, he came up with it in the Heights to make up for the, not make up, but like to add to the park and park of it all, to make it more cinematic. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll be able to do that. You know, just the idea of Defying Gravity.
Defying Gravity, I think, is going to look fantastic.
Like, she'll just be flying over all of them, like actually flying on her broom. That'll be freaking cool.
Yeah, she doesn't have to like stand up on the cherry picker. That's going to look
awesome.
She
doesn't, it's me. With the little clasp thing of her cape.
But there brings my biggest concerns. Visually, what if this looks like the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland kind of style? What if it's just over CG'd and Defying Gravity is kind of lessened by the fact that it's just overproduced? I could see that being an issue.
Yeah, there's always that risk. There's always the risk, you know, that they are going to lean a little too much into the pop auto-tune sound.
I doubt that.
Well,
I mean, that's one thing I doubt.
They don't have to, but I think, you know, some people
at
might
least
feel
not
like
for
they
our two
need
leads
to.
Anyway. Yeah.
So there is that concern.
Practical effects as much. Like, I want Dr. Dilliman to have good old-fashioned, like, glued to his face
prosthetics.
If they fucking CG make her skin green, I will go insane.
We've seen Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
Like, But the thing is, I think they know the stakes here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the studio choosing John Chu.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like when Clint Eastwood did Jersey Boys.
Oh, geez.
Like, we're not going for
realism. He did not know how to
here.
Handle that movie.
Oh, yeah. Or conversely, Susan Stroman with the producers,
did not
where
know,
you're like,
yeah.
you don't know how to do a yeah. movie.
Or how
so,
Prince
like,
with a Little Night Music.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's really
you're fabulous
hard.
On stage, but this is a completely different animal and you're not getting it.
You're not getting it. You lose that proscenium. You lose a lot of the magic. Mm-hmm. So you have to make up for it. And I'm optimistic that he will he'll deliver.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I get what you're saying about, you know, not being like too over stylized and over CGI like Alice in Wonderland. But I don't think we need to go like the other direction where it's like, you know, grim and dark and you know bleak Alan Moore stuff. I do not want to
see.
I don't want to see sad industrial Sweeney Todd Oz.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
The whole point is that it's like this place that looks like it's bright and colorful and cheerful, but there is like that stuff going on underneath it.
Honestly, my ideal visual style for this is Return to Oz with maybe like 5% saturation turned up. Because Return to Oz has like this incredible like setscape and like these incredible practical effects.
It's a very good looking movie, and it is, you know... I mean, it gave kids nightmares, but looking back, I think it's just the right amount of creepy.
Yeah.
Fucking love Return.
Return
to
Oz is a great movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good. Oh, man.
You know who directed it, though? Walter Murch, who, like, edited Apocalypse Now and The Godfather. His only movie he ever directed.
Huh.
He's
interesting.
Like, a good friend of George Lucas. He did this for Disney. He's like, all right, did that, never doing that again.
See, that's the version of Dorothy I want to see if we were to ever see Dorothy in Wicked.
Frooza Bulk.
Instead of just hearing her, I want Frooza Bulk version.
Yeah, I want to.
She's like, I'm going to get electroshock therapy.
Yeah. You know,
is that Ariana Grande?
Yeah.
It's all Ariana Grande. It never ends. But she actually does kind of talk like that. She's like, huh?
Yeah. I want to see. TikTok? Yeah, the one like thing that. I really want to see for Dorothy is I want to see how young she is.
Yes.
You know, she can't be any more than 12.
Like in the book.
I want to see this little kid and her poor little dog who is being sent off to kill this witch, and she is scared out of her little head about it.
I think we should keep with the stage show and never see her properly.
I
feel
like
that's
that
very
would work
important.
Too. But if we do
like
see her,
because if it was some cameo or something, or God forbid, an Uncanny Valley CGI face.
Oh my God,
Liza Minnelli!
Don't do that. Do not speak that into existence.
They pull a Mark Hamill
at the end of the Mandalorian.
That would be bad. Don't do that. What if they just used old footage of the original film? That would actually, I'd actually kind of like that.
I would like to hear like old audio from the original film.
Yeah.
Like hear Judy Garland's like kind of voice crying or he got away, he got away, like that. Like that's what I want
to
hear.
And
yeah.
then you just cut to Cynthia Erivo. Jesus Christ, who talks like that?
Oh, I want to know if Cynthia Erivo is going to be able to use her actual accent.
Yes, that is a good...
Because she's very British.
Yes, she is. But she can do a very convincing American accent.
Yeah, I would just like to see her be like, we can't all travel by bubble.
We can't come and go by bubble. I can see that working very well, but... even when they do Wicked in the UK, they do American accents. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's a fantasy world. It would probably work better with British accents.
Yeah. But Dr. Dillamond could be like a little British.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird.
Well, that's a great transition into our next section.
The wizard needs to be an American hick. I mean, he describes himself as such, so.
What?
Yeah.
How would we expect or think that they might fill out the rest of this cast?
Well, okay. So the speculation people have been saying, because you know, Wicked was originally produced by... one daddy papa daddy daddy Platt. Uh-huh.
I think he's learned his lesson, to be honest.
Like, Ben Platt better not be in this.
Yeah.
He better not.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind him being that professor that comes in and wheels in the line. He's like, I'm replacement Dr. Dillamond.
Yeah.
He could be
the evil guy who's torturing the lion.
He could be the monkey Chistery or whatever. Yeah. I'm hearing... it's so funny. People have been saying, speculating Fiero, and everyone that they've mentioned is, like, way too young to be paired with Cynthia Erivo. They're like, Jordan Fisher. I'm like, Jordan Fisher? Like, she's way older than, I mean, she's probably not. Yeah. She's probably like 5 years older. He looks so young to me that I'm like, oh,
I have
know.
A pitch that I would like, especially what? After In the Heights. Anthony Ramos, he'd be great.
Possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's riding high right now too. And yeah.
My thing, the one thing I really want is I want Fierro to be black. Several reasons. He's black in the book. Let's at least honor that. And, you know, tattoos. I think it's great that Cynthia...
With the triangle.
He's got diamond tattoos, which, you know, that's here or there. But, you know, I love that Cynthia Erivo is Elphaba, but as far as representation goes, it's kind of a moot point because Elphaba isn't black or brown or white. She's green. So, you know, I'd like to have somebody who... A black actor who is being black on screen in a major role in this. I think that would go a long way to show that they're moving forward from the way they dropped the ball on In the Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And you can round out a lot of the other roles with more Broadway people.
Absolutely.
And that, again, will satisfy the musical theater stance.
My theory is that, you know, the Wizard and Warrable, those are probably going to cast more for big name because that's, you know, that's like where you get definitely. Meryl Streep or, you know, whoever.
I don't want her in another movie. I'm sorry.
Someone said Christine Baranski Christine Baranski
would be awesome.
Online.
But, you know, you get your big name actor, you have them for a week, they dress them up and they do their thing, and then you get an advertise them all over the place. Now, I'd love to
and if they're a big name that like Christine Baranski or something who actually can sing, that's another bonus.
Yeah. I would also love to see, like, you know, one of the Broadway grand dames there, you know, if like we could get Bernadette or Patty or Bette Midler in there, you know, that would be fun. I think probably for like Nessa and you know, Bach and maybe Fierro could go either way. I think those are probably going to cast more for Broadway.
Mm-hmm. I do have a request with Nessa and Elphaba's father. I think they should be black to show so that we don't take Cynthia Erivo's innate blackness away from that character.
I think so, but I'd also, you know, I would also like them to do like, you know, a 98 Cinderella or a Hamilton, whatever, where they just have, you know, like, okay, everybody, you know, everybody, siblings, parents,
everyone's
kids, everybody's just like a different race and we're not going to explain it. That's just how it is.
Yeah. I mean, I hope at least they're being conscious of it while casting. I think they are. Or,
yeah.
I just don't want them to be like, well, we cast a black Elphaba. Our job
is done. You can't.
We solved racism.
We solved racism in Wicked.
No, we haven't. Yeah, I seriously want to see Ali Stroker as Nessa, actually.
I'm starting to wonder because the thing is she does, again, the obvious reasons, but she is starting, she does have a bit of that crossover success.
And she did perform at that Wicked performance audition thing.
Yeah, she's, you know, she's got the Broadway cred, you know, she could cross over. Mm-hmm. It's a smaller part, so they won't worry about having to give it to, you know, like a big name. And, you know, you can just, like, you know, do doubles in CGI for the one scene where she has to stand up.
And it would be a really cool way to, I mean, just cast an actual
person in a wheelchair in that role.
In a wheelchair. Exactly. And, you know, it would be cool if it went to an unknown, but I feel like since she is probably the most visible.
Yeah,
she's definitely the most visible.
She would be easier to
performer in a wheelchair.
She would be easier to sell to producers who think of that bottom line, but because it's like, well, here's this person that all the music theater people know. They'll love it.
Won a Tony, all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to me, that would be a smart choice. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're already.
Yeah.
She's got to be in the pilot.
I would hope so, yeah.
I mean, who else would be in that pile? Beanie Feldstein?
Well, like, or maybe more unknowns, like how, what's her name? The gal who played Nina in The Heights, she was kind of an unknown. They might do something like that, too, with her or with, like, Fierro or something.
What about the gentleman that played Benny in
Corey
in
Robinson,
the Heights?
Yeah, I think he would be another good option for Fierro.
Oh, yeah, he is wonderful. Oh, yeah, definitely.
I feel like that movie didn't do his character any favors, so...
No, it didn't. I mean, they cut out that whole conflict with him and Kevin, and I was like,
he has nothing to do, really.
That whole relationship was kind of moved into a supporting...
Yeah,
we just focused
situation,
on
which
Anthony Ramos.
It is what it is.
I still think the movie's better than the stage show for other reasons, but...
Oh, I agree. I love it so much.
It's a fantastic movie,
Yeah.
If you haven't watched it,
Okay, so who's taking bets on James Corden as Dr. Dillon?
I'd rather not imagine that.
Here's the thing, though. You know, as much as we are all sick of James Corden and would like him to sit, like, every musical out forever now... You know, I think him being cast in Wicked would not be the most disastrous thing ever, because it would be more dialed back for him. Because he's really...
Yeah, he wouldn't be playing really some goofy cat.
He's really insufferable when he's trying to play the wacky character. You look at the prom, you look at Cats, you look at the Cinderella. Again, when he...
No, but I like him in Into the Woods because he's grounded in the straight man.
You know, he's the guy, he's the ordinary guy who all these crazy people are standing around, and he's like, what the hell? Same with Doctor Who, the show he won the Tony for. Who happens to have this weird, crazy alien pop into his life.
Was it One Man, Two Governors?
And he won the Tony for One Man, Two Governors, where he's kind of like dealing with all the shenanigans around him. So, and he's been overexposed too. I mean, let's be honest. But he can sing and he can play a grounded character. Again, direction is key, everyone.
So yeah, again, he would not be my first choice. He probably wouldn't be my 50th choice. But if it happened, I don't think that, you know, it's not necessarily the deal breaker.
Just don't make him the wizard. Don't make him the wizard.
Can I offer an alternative for either the wizard or Dr. Dillman that I think would suit, would give the people at Universal someone they could actually put on their TV shows and use to promote it in a very popular space? Why don't we put Stephen Colbert, you know, the Sondheim alum performer, as Dr. Dillman or, the wizard?
Stephen Colbert would be great.
I think, yeah, I can see that. You know,
he promoted all over his show.
Yeah. You know, the whole thing about the wizard is that he seems like this nice, paternal, good, everybody's friend guy, and then you realize he's this manipulative demagogue, and I think Colbert could play that.
Like, I'm hearing him sing, have another drink, my dog, and it works in my ear. Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah, and I think you need... I think you need somebody with a little of that classic song and dance vibe for Wonderful, because that's very much in that mode, so...
I mean, if Conan's still at a show, I'd pick him before either of those two, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, and Colbert, like you said, Colbert is a big Sondheim fan. He's a big musical theater fan. Mm-hmm. I think it could be something he could, like, film in a week.
Yep. Right, right.
And he'd be great as either of them, I think. That's a cool choice.
Yeah.
I don't know why... I wouldn't be surprised if, like, they got someone like Hugh Jackman or something like the wizard.
I'm not feeling Hugh Jackman as the wizard, but I can see them trying it.
I know. Yeah, I'm not feeling it either, but yeah. I mean, if Joel Grey is so old, I wish he could do it again.
It would be nice, but yeah.
He still could.
Yeah,
he's
still kicking,
he is,
and, you know,
yeah.
He's
kind of like, you know, the Dick Van Dyke. He's old, but, you know, he's still got it, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. There's just so many, like, middle-aged guys in Hollywood who could just do it.
Okay,
yeah,
another
older
pitch.
Song and dance men. Somebody mentioned Alan Cumming on Twitter, which I think would be good for either the wizard or Dillamond.
He'd be a better wizard. Come on.
He would be a fantastic wizard, but I can see him again, doing Dillamond, because, he's...
All right.
He'd be a very, if he went with it like how he did the mayor on Schmigadoon, then I could see that. I slimy MC Alan Cumming, not so much. But
you know, he doesn't have to be the slimy guy. He can be deceptively genial. I mean, Reefer Madness has, a little more of the darker edge, but that's kind of the vibe where I'm thinking. You know, he seems like, this ordinary, I'm just concerned for the children people.
All right, another pitch that might be a little too daddy, but still very hot at the moment. Jason Sudeikis. He's got that Americana charm of the wizard, and he'd be great, and he can sing.
Well, the thing we need to remember is, spoiler alert, the wizard is Elphaba's father, so there does need to have that. They do need to have that age difference and dynamic.
I mean, how old is he? He's in his 50s, isn't he?
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know. It's either late 40s or early 50s. Are you looking at
him? Let's see. How old is he?
Let's all look up Jason.
46. He's only a couple years older than me.
Oh,
so.
My
gosh.
He's only 46.
What a baby.
He doesn't, and he doesn't look it.
What
I'm not
a baby.
Sure he could play Cynthia Erivo's
dad. You're right. I was thinking more Dillamond. He would be very good in that role.
Yeah.
You know what? It would actually be pretty cool if they just made Dillamond a puppet, and then they could dub in whoever's voice later.
What if they got someone like... I'm thinking of like Schmigadoon actors right now. Like, what if someone like Fred Armisen? He would be the weirdest wizard. He'd be like, wow, hi.
Or Keegan-Michael Key or something.
Oh my God, I love that idea.
He would be great.
He's a bit young, but...
He's in his 50s. Well, what are you talking about?
Again, he doesn't look it, but yeah, he would totally rock as the wizard. I mean, did you see him in Jingle Jangle? That was, yeah.
Well, and he's so good at,
he can also be very threatening.
He's so good at being big.
Mm-hmm. And he can fit the colors that would create Elphaba.
Yeah, and he'd be really charming, and he
can be charming.
Like
he can be a dick, and but at the same time, you know, he can be a dick that you feel sorry for because at the
and
end he finds out that he put out.
I could see him doing wonderful. I could see him like.
I mean, at the very end, where he finds out he put a hit out
he's
on his
right
own daughter.
Me.
I mean, you know, he's like, you know, you do kind of feel for him a bit.
Yeah,
he's right here on my wall. There he is.
As long as he's not playing like himself the way that he does. Tend to do sometimes. Like, if he leans more into the Schmigadoon as a character kind of thing, I think it would be great. Mm-hmm. I have not seen Jingle Jangle, though. That film looks incredible, though.
It's fun. I mean, it's got, you know, primarily black cast. It has got, like, that peak, you know, Victorian holiday aesthetic going on, and it's just a fun movie.
Man. All right. Let's talk about concerns again, because I do have concerns about, not Bach specifically. We haven't talked about Bach yet. Before we move on to that, who do we think for Bach? I know we've pitched Ben Platt thank you.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
See, now Bach, I feel like they could go with if they go with like an Ali Stroker, then I think like a younger guy.
Yeah.
Would work.
Yeah, like this this underclass.
I think Fiero's got to have a little more gravity. Got to be a little older to kind of match.
Yeah, but Bach,
Arrivo
you can play
Grande,
off as like this younger underclassman who is just absolutely besotted with Glinda, and you know doesn't see that she's using him. So
Andrew Barth Feldman or something like that.
Yeah. I'm sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't know who any of these people are. I'm sure there's like some boy on High School Musical series or something who'd be great. But again, that would be another good one for like, like a Broadway guy who's trying to kind of transition to film a little bit.
I mean, I feel like they'll give it to more film centric person, a comedic younger actor, only because he doesn't sing much. He doesn't have much to sing.
He doesn't sing much, but.
Yeah, maybe there's someone on like on a sitcom or something right now. One of the Stranger Things.
Oh, Finn Wittrock. Finn Wittrock in there.
Oh, that with the little. Oh God, I can't remember his name. This kid, the boy who can sing.
He does have a voice.
Yeah, he'd be great. That'd be perfect. Come on. Okay, that.
I can't remember his name.
That's our lock-in of the week. Gaten Mazzarello.
There you go.
Yes.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Back to the
I want to tell you guys right now. So my friend who writes for Variety just messaged me, and she said, I got to tell Ariana Grande I think her casting is great, and she was so cute about
it. Aww. Yeah, I'm sure she knows that there's going to be eyebrows raised, so bless her.
I think she's going to, you know, she's not just like, okay, you know how Taylor Swift thought she could act for a second just because she was like kind of funny, and it turned out she was terrible
yep.
at it?
Yeah.
Like, that's not Ariana Grande. Yeah. Like most people who have done any kind of acting in their life, where did they get their start? Their school shows.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and her school shows transcended to like regional theater. Like, she was in the Pasadena Playhouse Snow White panto a decade ago, like just in my neighborhood.
She was in a Jason Robert Brown musical, and Jason Robert Brown writes some of her songs now. Come on. She's Broadway.
I mean,
pedigree.
Yeah. And the thing is, even if she hasn't done a bunch of it, she understands
right.
it. And I think she understands the importance of mm-hmm. it. I don't think she would just be like, well, I could just do this because I'm entitled
no.
to
yeah.
Like, I think she probably, again, just speculating, mm-hmm. I think she's well aware of how many eyes are going to be
yeah.
on her.
She's not going to.
And how many
you
eyebrows
know, she's
are
she's not
going to
steal I'm Not That Girl like Madonna did in Evita, so.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing. They might change keys.
That's fine.
They might change yeah. some keys for her. Who cares? I literally don't care.
I prefer like, Madonna's key in Evita in most songs, to be honest.
When I remember it, my brain, the movie Evita was the first time I had absorbed Evita. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like 14 or yeah. something. And I remember loving it. And then I listened to the Broadway album after that. And I was like, how does one actress not go literally insane playing this
yep.
role?
I think because Patty might have
you
a
have
little
to
bit,
sing,
unfortunately.
She 100% did. Like, she has to go between like star quality to like, as I part you. Like, that's
yeah.
an insane range. And like, every song is your song. Mm-hmm. That's insane. I have no problem. There, you can say what you want about the Evita film. There's a lot of problems.
There's not many
key
problems.
Changes.
I'd say that film makes a pretty good
it's
choices.
Probably the, it's probably the best adaptation of an Andrew Lloyd Webber show.
Of an Andrew.
And I know that is a ridiculously
right.
low bar to clear, but.
I'm working on.
Hey, Antonio Banderas is sexy
yeah.
in it. He's a sexy
I'm
chick.
I'm working on a 90-minute video on Andrew Lloyd Webber film adaptations, and yeah, that is basically the conclusion, but. I still think Jesus Christ Superstar is a more fun film to watch.
Definitely,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, biggest concerns about adaptation-wise. Can you still hear me?
You kind of went away there for a bit.
Okay, biggest
there
concerns at adaptation-wise. I've always had problems with the opening of Wicked. It is messy. This is a very show.
She's dead stuff.
Let's flashback.
Well,
all right, here's your context.
Okay, let me pitch something to you. Okay, because in the book, they have this, you know, they have the Clock of the Time Dragon, which is like this little mechanical theater that goes around and shows like the secrets of people's lives. So what if it were done like that? What if, you know, Glinda's talking and
puppet
like you
show?
See this little play, you know, this
oh,
little
true.
Play stage open with, you know, like puppet, you know, Milena and Frex and, you know, like a little shadowy wizard figure and all of this, you know, things. How would that work?
I would appreciate that more, especially if it was like animated. Have you guys, either of you seen the new Candyman?
I have not, but like, you know, like what they did with the trailer, that's kind of what I'm talking
yeah,
about. I can see
that's
something
exactly
in that
what
style.
I want.
Or like in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Oh, yeah, where
they
do
the
story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brothers.
I think, you know, if you stylize,
beautiful animation.
If you stylize yeah. it, if you make it a little visually interesting, it'll play a lot better as opposed to this happened, flashback, this happened, flashback, this happened, song, song, song.
Kind of like Hunchback of Notre Dame. As weird as that sounds, I love. It doesn't feel messy. Oh my God, Stephen Schwartz just did the same goddamn thing, didn't he?
It's not
oh my God.
Yeah, it's not messy there because the transit, again, the animation, the transitions are pretty good, like where you have Clopin going stop and the lightning flashes and it's the Archdeacon. I think that's, you know, they do some interesting stuff with it.
I think if they lean yeah. towards that, it would be a lot better.
That whole opening sequence, I think, on stage, yeah, it doesn't
work.
It feels so cinematic. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. When you listen to the album, like when I listen to it, it goes in. Yeah, it's like I'm watching a flashback now.
Yeah.
And I think on stage, it's like he comes out and he's from behind mm-hmm. and you don't see him. And it's a guy being like,
yeah.
have another drink. And I just think you're right. I think there's a way to make it way more interesting On film by using animation or, you know, flashbacks or whatever creative stuff.
Wicked isn't that theatrical or musical if you think about it. It isn't using theater to its most effective nature. I think by all naturality, this should be better than the stage show.
I think it's one of those that can translate a little better to film than some can. Because, you know, a lot of it suggests...
Unlike Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh my god. But a lot of it suggests set pieces. I mean, you have One Short Day. I mean, that's like this huge Emerald City production number. You can open that up like you would not believe.
Oh
actual flying during Defying Gravity. You know, maybe some. You know, maybe for I'm Not That Girl.
Glinda actually arrived.
Driving in
a bubble.
I'm Not That Girl. You know, you do something a little laid back. Maybe she's standing on a bridge looking down at the water, you know.
Okay, there's question about I'm Not That Girl. Mm-hmm. This is just a logistic question. It is raining during that scene. Like, we see water hit her, and then Marble's like, oh, I'm going to clean up the weather now. Do we see that in the movie, do you think? Or are we going to get, like, a bunch of cock teases of her, like, almost getting wet?
So maybe. That, you know, that's a good question.
You know, this is something that has been kind of lost in Wicked over the years, and it's just the nature of it. But like when Wicked first came out, the allusions to the Wizard of Oz themselves were just like the audience. Like when she says, "I'd be so happy I could melt," like the audience goes, "Like, yeah, she's gonna like." And
I know the story.
All that foreshadowing going on.
Yes. Or I was talking on Twitter with someone who had seen it around when I had seen it in San Francisco pre-Broadway, and how the audience just applauded when they finally saw the house, the house crushing the sister moment when they show up. And then there were people responding going, I've seen the show a million times and no one's ever clapped for that moment.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to understand, like in like 2003, this was novel.
I mean,
and,
yeah,
like, seeing
I mean,
this,
it
was like, I can't believe I'm seeing this on stage. Like, because, you know, when people say they don't like musicals, I always say, have you seen a Disney Renaissance film? Have you seen The Sound of Music? Have you seen The Wizard of Oz?
Right.
Those are the ones, the musicals that everyone has seen.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to have seen The Wizard of Oz to get the pop culture references.
Exactly.
That's how ingrained it is.
Yeah.
So that stuff, I'm interested to see how it, how they can play with that on screen, because it is an iconic
but
film.
But at the same time, there's this danger here, because we are in the era of reboots and remakes, and there is always that danger that they're going to try to be too clever with it. You know, they're gonna have the guy basically be pointing at the screen saying, "See, here's the thing that you all like." You know, isn't this great? We've got the thing. So, I think you have to do
remember
that.
This reference?
Yeah,
reference?
You have to do that a little with Wicked, because it's the nature of the beast, but you can't be, you know, too on the nose about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
There are now some curious questions. Like, Nessa is very badly treated by the musical, especially... she's dead now. She's dead. He killed her. How do we... I think that John M. Chu was smart enough to be like, oh, let's try to soften this a little bit.
Yeah, dial this back a bit.
Yeah, okay, so, again, it's been a minute. She's the one... She's in love with Bach.
Yeah.
Bach's not in love with her. Bach's in love with Linda. And then she... Woman scorned turns him into a tin man, right?
Well,
she's like, you
woman
got...
Woman scorned, she takes his heart. And then Elphaba turns him into the tin man to save him.
So he
because,
can't die.
Yeah, so he can't die. And then he gets pissed off because Elphaba turns him into the tin man.
Yes. So, like, we kind of... And then next time we see her, she is underneath a house dead.
Yes.
I think they can flesh it out, especially if they do get someone like an Ally Stroker who... I don't know. I think they'll be... Kind of like how with the In the Heights film, I think there's going to be stuff that they cut and trim.
Yeah.
But then stuff that new scenes and dialogue that they add to flesh out certain elements.
What do you think is like the most likely song or scene to be cut?
Something Bad.
I was just going to say, what's that song that Dr. Dillabox
I mean, you know,
and nobody
you know,
will
you can
be
just,
worse
you can,
off.
You know, you can convey that he's
you
losing
can accomplish
his power.
It in two sentences.
Yeah, you can convey he's losing his power of speech. I mean, you know, if you have a if you have a music theater performer, you know, you might want to do it, but it's not necessary.
Or replace it with a better song. The only person in the world who I've met that likes that song is Andrew, because he's like, it's a goat. It's funny.
God. Yeah, what are... I'm trying, I'm like kind of going through the Going through the track listing in my head.
I've never liked One Short Day, but the idea of expanding that song.
You know, it's going to be a production number. I think they're going to have it. They might trim bits of it here. They might trim that weird little bit in the middle with like the show, the Wizomania thing. Yeah. But I think it will appear in some form.
Yeah, let's go see Wizomania.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think it will appear in some form.
Like you said, that could be another way to make specific parallels to the film because, you know, the horse of a different color and all that shit. That'd be kind of interesting to throw those like little Easter eggs in, things that you might recognize. It'd be cool. And you could do that with CGI instead of, you know, like Kool-Aid, which is what
it was. Jell-O. They rubbed Jell-O onto it.
Oh, Jell-O. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Kool-Aid Jell-O. Yeah. So that might be kind of cool. Let's see. Something bad.
I think they might cut Sentimental Man and just turn that into dialogue.
I was just going to say Sentimental Man.
I think you have to have Wonderful because that's a really good, pitch song. And if you have a good song in Dance Man for the Wizard, that's going to be his big showcase.
Yeah, but most of the, now that I'm looking,
a lot
at it,
of it is
of
you know
songs,
a showcase for one of the can't two, cut or these. For either of the leads or both. So you know, I mean, you know, you're gonna go to this because you want to hear Popular and Defying Gravity and For Good and What Is This Feeling.
You know, I've mentioned this to you guys before, but one of my gripes with Wicked, and this could just be me, one of the things that has always just taken me out of the moment is when they're at, it's the end of the, near the end of the show, she's got Dorothy in the other room, they're all coming for her, and Glinda's there, and oh my God, the stakes are so high, and we gotta go, and then it goes, doo, 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 and then they stop and sing a 3-minute song about how they're besties, and I'm like,
what if we did the Into the Woods thing and time freezes and they just kind of stop in this moment.
I can see that, yeah.
Or just like have them come, just have the guards come after they finish the song, something. Yeah. I don't know. That's always taken me out of the moment. And I know everyone loves For Good, but I've taught it to so many kids at this point that I could go the rest of my life without hearing it again.
They're not going to cut it, obviously, but I get the feeling.
I know, but like when we watched that concert the other day, like my husband, every time he sees For Good, he gets like, he's like, this song is so beautiful. And I'm like, I feel nothing. What's a skybird?
As opposed to any other bird.
That's
just say a bird.
That's an Oz talk. I feel like that's whatever.
Yeah. No, the one that always got me was the terrible green blizzard or whatever. It's like, do they have those in Oz? What is that? Where is that coming from?
I always was like, why wouldn't she say terrible green lizard?
Yeah. Well, like lizards don't fly, but again, it's Oz. Maybe they do. I don't know. I don't know. People are always, you know, people always complain about the, you know, there are bridges you didn't know you crossed till you crossed or however the line goes. And I'm like, yeah, it sounds weird. But when you think about it, you know, it kind of makes sense. You know, Glinda's trying to think her way through, you know, these complicated feelings. Glinda's trying to think her way through the complicated feelings that she can't quite express. And I think that works out very well. I think there are other points where the lyrics just do other things that's like, okay, that's the choice you're going with then.
Okay. And I can't wait. And again, that's not a big high coloratura note. It's a nice solid, like, I don't know, like an A or a B.
Yeah, it's a good.
Ariana will
good,
sing that great.
It's a good,
she'll
solid,
sing that lyric,
you know,
great.
Middle range.
Cross till you cross.
That's probably, you know, maybe a C at the top.
That might be one of the scenes I think Ariana might have the more difficulty in, being like this political statesman. That is the one thing I have not seen her do that I will be curious to see how she does, where she has to be like this political figure, this two-faced.
Yeah, well, figurehead. Sure, yeah. So, you know, she's just basically there to look pretty and say the right words. So, you know, I guess if you convey that a bit more, she could pull it off.
It is a lot of fun in this movie. I think it'll be good. Like, legitimately, I'm concerned mostly just because of, like, big budgets tend to lead to high CGI and gross-looking movies.
And, you know, producers and studios have made the best intentions go awry. So, you know, it could still, everything could still go pear-shaped. But I think, you know, this is a good place to start with it. And I'm curious to see where they go with it. When is it supposed to release? Do they actually have a date, or are they just like, sometime 2023-ish?
They said winter 2023. I don't know if that got pushed back due to some more recent issues they have where they're changing where they're shooting it.
Okay.
Oh, where are they shooting? shooting
They were shooting it in the U.S. somewhere on a soundstage, but now I think they're moving to the U.K. for probably because of, you know, the strikes that might be going on soon.
Oh, yes.
Right.
So, yeah, they're uprooting a bit.
Yeah.
Support
strikers, by the way. Anyway.
Yeah, so that...
We love IATSE.
Yep. Yeah. That's a good note. Guys, I think we talked Wicked. Do you guys have anything you want to promote out there for the world?
Yeah, the usual stuff. You know, Musical Hell is still going on. I'm working on a couple of episodes right now that I'm really excited about. And, you know, I'm on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook. You know, come talk to me. I, you know, spend too much time on the internet posting weird shit that goes through my brain.
Me too. Emily.
Yeah. So I actually just finished the other day. I just finished editing this video I've been working on for months.
Oh, the 60s one?
The evolution of 60s musicals.
Little Hal Prince Gerald. I can't wait.
Oh, it's so cute. Gerald's reenactments are very cute. It's over an hour long, it's a research paper I've adapted into. I don't know what you would call it, a research paper, I suppose. So that'll be coming out soon. Maybe even this weekend as we're recording it, because but other than that, you can find me on YouTube at Stealing Focus, and I'm on Twitter at Emily AB Clark. It looks like Emily ABC Lark, and I'm on, you know, Twitter, TikTok, Insta, all the socials with that. So yeah,
all right. Come find us.
And we're on a podcast called Dear
Yes,
Friends.
We are.
Yes, I've heard of that. I love you guys very much. Thank you for joining us today. This was a blast.
Love you too. Yes, this was fun. Yeah. I love music nerding. I love musical nerding out with you guys. It's always fun.
Yes. And I believe in Ariana Grande.
I believe in an Ariana Grande from Starbucks. And
hello.
I don't believe in her licking donuts. That's kind of gross.
Ew.
No, yeah.
And saying that she hates America. Do you remember when that happened?
Yeah.
And then everyone's she said she hates America. I'm like, she licked the fucking donut. Like, that was just, and we're talking about that?
So funny.
You know what? That is peak Linda energy, so I agree with it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. It is good to see me, isn't it?
We'll see you next time on Musical Richies.
Bye-bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.